into a bucket. It's jokey. Well, maybe. Well, I love it. That is PA's Scritability from the forthcoming release, Early, featuring, let's count them, 13 of the sort of early songs from Scritability. From 4A Sides, that was from 1979. And hopefully, as I say, on the other end of the line now will be Green. Are you there, mate?
I'm here, mate. How are you?
I'm very good, yeah. It's been a long time since we've met, but we can talk about that a little bit later, perhaps.
Okay.
So, if we're going to start at the beginning of Scritability, how and where did you start?
Leeds. We were at Leeds together doing fine art. Well, me and Tom the drummer were, and Neil, who's the bass player, moved up to Leeds with me. I met him at school in South Wales, and that would have been in, late 77, I think.
Right.
Beginning of 78.
Okay. Oh, well, I did meet you, as I say, and you were a pretty serious and politically motivated young man, weren't you?
Well, I was interested in politics. I'm not sure how serious I was.
Right.
You know, yeah, no, I was pretty serious about politics, yeah, but, tried to have a laugh as well, but,
No, we all have a laugh along the way, don't we? But I do remember, there's one famous pop quiz question, you might not have stumbled across this, but I have in the past, you know, and it goes, what band named themselves after a pamphlet written by an Italian Marxist? Now, it's not going to be Shed 7, is it?
No, that's has that obviously been a question?
Yeah, that's the kind of people
that I would have known the answer to that.
You wouldn't? Well, you would have done if you had been on my team. And so, I mean, I've been looking into kind of how you came together. I'm asking you these questions. I actually know the answers, obviously, because I know a bit about you and stuff. But you described the scene that you came from as the squattage industry.
Yes.
Were you a sort of prototype for the young ones? Because it seems to me like, you know, you're just all these guys into Marxism, making music, not giving a damn about the rest of the world. Is that a romantic notion?
Yeah, it was exactly like that. We were squatting in Camden Town in complete squalor. We didn't have a bathroom or anything. We used to have to go to the local baths to have a bath, and it was fabulous.
Is that your idea of fabulous?
It was for about 5 years, actually.
Was it really?
I really thought it was, because we kind of, on all the records, we would put our address where we lived, and so people were at liberty to come and knock on our door. And they did, you know, sort of 24 hours a day, pretty much. And then, you know, Europeans would turn up and there'd be mad Italian girls and strange public school boys from Shropshire. And you never knew what to expect. And it was kind of like a party for a long time. It was good.
Did that not... I mean, you know, that's a pretty serious lifestyle. I mean, we all need a little bit kind of quality time on our own.
Yeah, no, it took its toll, you know. I ended up in hospital, obviously. After a few years of that. But, it was great.
Okay, and maybe I'll try it.
it's for late teens and early 20s only, I think.
Not mid-40s?
No, I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, all right, then I won't. All right, one of the, you were one of the first bands to start your own label, weren't you? And I know that you were inspired by Desperate Bicycles.
Yes.
Did you find that liberating, or, I mean, I had a record label for a while, and I found it to be a right pain in the arse. I mean, you're there sort of rubber-stamping labels.
Yeah. No, that was all fun. I mean, fantastic fun. It still should be fun, you know.
Yeah.
I think, we made handmade all the sleeves and hand-stamped all the labels and, took the records around ourselves and people used to send them back to us not infrequently saying, you know, this is disgusting garbage, don't make any more.
Right.
Which was always encouraging.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing to do. I'm sure it's still a good thing to do.
Well, one of the people who didn't say that to you was Jeff Travis at Rough Trade.
That's right.
And we had Jeff Travis on the programme a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he was obviously, I mean, having spoken to you now and having spoken to Jeff, I mean, you were kindred spirits. Did you find the sort of Rough Trade's communist ideals, you know, did you feel at home there?
Yeah, you know, I was a young lefty, and so was he, and, you know, we used to put on benefit gigs for various left organizations, and Jeff would always, it was a good scam actually, because we'd go to Jeff and say, can we sell some records at this gig, you know, and he'd say, yeah, help yourself to anything in the shop, and we'd sort of hand pick, you know, 50 or 60 of records, and a couple of them never got returned to Rough Trade.
Yes.
At the end of every gig, you know, we never really sold any, and I don't think we ever made any money, but it was good fun.
Yeah, no, I'll bet. Yeah, well, I mean, this, the imminent CD reissue, I've just got a note, it's out on the 14th of February.
Is it?
Early. It certainly is, yeah. I'm glad I found that out now, because I thought you might have known. Did you go back, enjoy going back to all this material?
No. I absolutely, no, it makes me feel very uncomfortable. I haven't actually heard it since we did it, you know. I never like to hear, I'd never trust a man that likes the sound of his own music, I don't think. That's, and, yeah, it just makes me feel uncomfortable. I had to listen to it once, recently, right, top to bottom, and I kind of squirmed through the whole thing. But, you know, that's me. I mean, yeah, I just never liked the sound of anything. Do you like the sound of your own music?
No, I don't particularly. I don't even like listening back to programmes because I hate the sound of my own voice.
Well,
there
you go. It's exactly like that, really.
Yeah, I know.
You know, which wouldn't stop me unreservedly commending it to, you know, sensitive souls, other than myself. But, yeah, no, for me it's hard going.
Well,
yeah.
I have to say, I mean, you know, we played one of the John Peel sessions that you did.
Yeah.
And there was one track on it in particular, which I noticed was, it was titled The Same Day... that you did the session, like, I don't know, the 13th, yeah, the 5th, 1970.
That's right, yeah.
And that was particularly hard work, I hope you don't mind me saying. I mean, you obviously just went in there, or it seemed to be the case that you went in and just did the tune off the top of your head.
No, it was painstakingly worked out and,
No.
No. Yeah, no, we did, well, actually, we gave up. The idea was not to be, you know, it was a kind of whole anti-commercial thing, so we kind of tried not to rock, you know,
yeah.
So which meant that you'd make sure you turned your amp, cranked your amp all the way down to 2 and turned the distortion button off and try not to play any recognisable chords. In the end, we stopped writing songs altogether and just make it up on the spot.
Did you?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Now, I noticed that you remastered this, obviously you only listened to it once, you just told us that, but you remastered this from vinyl. The master tapes have gone. Did you burn them as an act of art terror?
No, I don't know where the master tapes of anything I've ever done is. I don't, you know, I don't know where they went.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't, I can't, you know, I make it, you know, I try to forget as much of the past as possible. I'm not in a bad way, it's just good strategy, I think.
Yeah, just to move on, get it out of your system.
You know, one of those skills that you get really good at forgetting stuff, and it's one of those skills that, you know, the more beer you drink, the better you are at it.
Yeah, no, that's my philosophy as well.
Yeah, so,
But, well, bearing all that in mind,
yeah,
how on earth, and this is not meant to be at all funny, but how on earth did you come up with one of the greatest pop records ever made in The Sweetest Girl? Because everything that you've just said now sort of, like, it beggars belief as to how you came up with The Sweetest Girl eventually.
Weird, because I got tired of, like, being anti-pop, as it were. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I just thought, sod this for a lark, let's try and write some proper songs.
Right, did you not see that as you being defeated? Because you've got all these principles, and I know that initially you set out to overthrow the major record labels and all that kind of stuff, and as you say, completely deconstruct the whole sort of oeuvre, and then one day you thought, oh, cobblers to that, I want to write a great pop tune, and you did it.
Well, in some ways, that sort of moving away from the whole indie thing, I got sick of the whole indie thing,
right.
You know, I didn't like the way it became, you know, a thing, and a sound, and a look, and, you know, it had its special shops and its distribution and its I just kind of thought that sucked, so I thought, what's something else I've never done, and that would be, you know, like make pop music, and that was like a radical gesture in a way to see if you could do that.
Yeah, sure.
So that's what that was. I think The Sweetest Girl was probably the first, you know, attempt at writing a song you could sing along to.
Well, it worked, didn't it? Were you surprised at how good? I mean, it's just one of the great pop records, isn't it? There's no doubt about it.
No, I don't know. I never listened to it, but,
it goes as sweet world.
No, Madness covered it. I was chuffed about that. Did you know Madness did a bit?
Of course, yeah, they had a big hit with it, but of course your version is 100 times better. I'm not just creeping. Yes,
yeah.
Go and listen to it. Now, you mentioned before you were very ill, you know. I mean, you had a heart attack, didn't you, at the age of 23?
It wasn't a heart attack. I had a bit of a heart, thing that was exacerbated by lifestyle, and then I got like really bad panic attacks, so I stopped playing live. I was, you know, I was on a tour with a gang of four, and I used to get sicker and sicker every day, and then I got taken into hospital in Brighton, I think it was, and
right.
That was, you know, the last gig I ever played live was with a gang of four in Brighton. I thought, this is too injurious to my health.
Yeah, so you obviously never enjoyed playing live, really, then?
No, it scared the bejesus out of me.
Right, okay.
I always got very, very nervous. So, you know, I think, you know, they don't necessarily go together. Like, enjoying making music is one thing, and enjoying performing is quite different.
Right. Okay, did that period of your life, was that sort of pivotal in making you change that route and decide to go?
Yeah, I guess I spent a bit of time recuperating and started listening to different kinds of music, lots of American stuff, which I'd never really listened to. All my major influences had been, you know, British stuff. And then I started listening to more black music and more American music and rethinking things. And I just kind of went to New York and went for it, really.
How was it taken? Because, I mean, obviously, I mean, you could have been construed as selling out. I know it's a crap term. And as you just said, I mean, the indie scene was as conformist as the major scene. But a lot of people wouldn't have accepted that at the time. Were you accused of selling out for doing all this pop music?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't... I wouldn't have been at all bothered if I was.
Right.
That sort of just... It's kind of, it seems kind of just a bit silly, really. You know, you've got to follow what... you know, you've got to get on and do new things and follow your heart.
Absolutely, follow your heart. I mean, not a comparison you'll immediately embrace, I wouldn't have thought, but I heard Mick Hucknall talking recently about how he got rid of his band one by one, you know, throughout the years, because he just wanted to get the best musicians around him to make the best possible music. Now, I'm not saying he achieved that, but was that your kind of, again, the kind of philosophy where you thought, well, I'm never really going to crack it with the original lineup of the Squishy
No, I think
Pumpkins.
The original lineup kind of fell to bits under lots of different pressures, you know. And one of them might have been the fact that, you know, I was keen to, you know, I was like, well, let's play some funk or let's do some this. And I think they were a little less enthusiastic about that to begin with than I was. Plus, you know, that whole thing of, you know, life in the squat got pretty intense.
Right,
and,
okay. I suppose you had to do something, didn't you?
Things drifted apart. So, I went to New York, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you're not overly prolific, are you? When can we expect something new from Squitty Bullet?
Well, I'm working on a new album.
Right.
And it's supposed to be finished next month. It isn't going to be finished next month.
Right.
But, I haven't told Jeff Travis that yet.
Well, I won't tell him.
Yeah, no, and blimey, you know, soon.
Okay, yeah, let's be vague. It doesn't matter,
you know,
does it, really?
Soon.
Yeah, they'll just have to wait, won't they?
Yeah.
All right, well, before you leave us, as I say, you once promoted a fall communist benefit gig at Leeds University, didn't you?
Yes.
And I think it was, through no fault of your own, or probably our fault completely, the smallest audience we'd ever play to. And I reminded you of that in an email, and you replied, "By the by, the gig was, as I recall, a Communist Party benefit or some such, so sadly it was a revolution that was out of pocket, and as a consequence had to be postponed indefinitely."
Yes. The Communist Party lost money on you, didn't it?
They did, yeah.
And it hastened its decline.
Absolutely. It's all our fault.
I think so.
But, yeah, your reply, it tickled me no end. So, are you still an active member of the Communist Party, or is
that... No, you're joking.
Right. I'll take that as a no, you're joking then, Adrian. Brilliant. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been very nice to speak to you. I've not seen you for a long, long time. And,
yep.
Like I say, for what it's worth, which is absolutely nothing, this is the era of Squitty Plitty that I really, really enjoy. So.
Good. I'm glad somebody does.
Yes. Everybody's out there shouting, "You're on your own, mate." But I don't think so, you know. I'll tell you what, if you want to stick around on the other end of the phone, which you probably don't, but we're going to play The Sweetest Girl now, and you won't have to listen to it yourself.
Okay.
All right, then. Well, it's
Thank
been
you.
Great speaking to you.
Thank you.
All right, take care, then.
Bye, Mark.
Cheers, Green. Bye.